KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Well, a familiar name to KLYT ABQ Connect listeners. I know years ago, Peter Benson welcomed Ace Collins onto the broadcast. Maybe Jim Williams, but I know I have as well. And Ace is our ace in the hole, right? To ace in the sleeve to go to when we start approaching the holidays with Thanksgiving coming up. And now, of course, Christmas. And Ace, welcome back into ABQ Connect.
It is great to be with y'all. You know, the Smithsonian Institute now calls me Doc Holliday. So maybe that's the best nickname I've ever gotten. I don't know. I mean, you know, in Australia yesterday was called Father Christmas, which was a unique one too. But I love talking about this time of year. I love talking about the stories behind, you know, the songs and that we so treasure. I mean, when you think about it, Christmas is a time machine, and hearing a song takes us back through time, and we can suddenly remember the smells of the kitchen at grandmother's house or the way the tree looked. We hear the voices of people who are long gone now, but they're fresh and they're new. And just hearing one of those great Christmas carols or one of those great Christmas hits on the radio does that. And there's no other time of the year that happens. And it's so magical. It's so wonderful. And I am so grateful now that it actually lasts 5 or 6 weeks rather than just 3 or 4. And because it does give us an opportunity to really immerse ourselves in a time of the year that's about giving, that's about family, that's about all of the elements that made that first Christmas special, we can embrace as well for our own Christmas. And when we know the stories behind these songs, suddenly they even have more meaning to us.
Agreed. Well, with that being said, Ace, let's jump into some of these great carols or Christmas. Now, maybe you go there. Maybe you better know than, you know, what earns something the distinction of a carol as opposed to a Christmas song?
I think a carol probably is more of the hymn kind of song. You know, the most sung Christmas song of all time is a carol. And it goes back over 200 years when a priest was frantic because he went to the church for his Christmas Eve Mass, his first ever Christmas Eve Mass in Oberndorf, Austria, and discovered the organ wouldn't work. There's all kinds of rumors and legends about a mice eating the bellows and stuff like that. That wasn't the case. It had been playing out for a long time and finally just gave up the ghost. It's Christmas Eve. He had organized his entire service around music. And in a panic, he ran across town to a friend's house who was a school teacher named Franz Gruber. And this young priest, Joseph Moore, asked Gruber, "What are we going to do?" And Gruber said, "I can play guitar." He said, "No, it only works with organ music, the music I picked out." And that's when Gruber suggested they write something for the service. Well, 3 years before, when he was visiting his uncle on a Christmas Eve, this priest had written a poem. Now, the amazing thing about this story to me is the fact that he knew exactly where to go to find that poem. Because most of us write something, we put it aside, we move, and we can never find it again. This guy was able to find the poem. They set that poem to music, and that night taught it to the choir. And it really did save the Christmas Eve service in this very small church in Austria. And the name of the song was Silent Night. Still He Knocked, Heilige Nacht, in the language they sang it in that night. Now, that was a stopgap measure. That song probably should have never been heard again, but someone had to fix the organ. And 3 weeks later, when a man who fixes organs all over Europe came by to do the repair work, he asked the priest, "What did you do for music on the Christmas Eve Mass?" And the priest picked up the guitar and played the song for him. That man wrote down the lyrics, learned the music, and left after fixing the organ. Well, 30 years later, this priest is walking through Cologne, Germany, and hears this song that he has not heard in 30 years, the song that saved one Christmas Eve service, okay? Being sung by a choir at this cathedral. And he wondered, how did this happen? And the story is, the organ repairman became the Johnny Appleseed of Silent Night. And by the time the priest heard it 30 years later, it was being sung all over the world and had already been translated into more than 30 different languages. I think the most unique part of this whole story is, what was the name of the church in Oberndorf, Austria, where this song was first performed? St. Nicholas.
That is, if that doesn't match the season, then I don't know what does. And as I hear that, for whatever reason, Romans 8:28 comes to mind, right? That in spite of the fact, you know, things may not go how we anticipate, the Lord will find a way to be glorified in it. And he certainly did with Silent Night. Now, I have to imagine, now, Ace, you're a human being, so as you went to go do your research on these various carols and best loved Christmas songs, that you had, I'm betting, that you picked a favorite of yours. Now, maybe it was Silent Night, but is there a favorite of yours that you'd like to share?
From a carol standpoint, I think that my favorite story is O Holy Night, because there are actually four great stories behind it, not just one. You go back to the early 1800s, a French man was asked by his parish priest to write a poem for the Christmas Eve Mass. He wrote it on a trip to Paris. He was so impressed with his poem, he took it to a friend of his who wrote operas and said, "Can you set this to music?" And the man said, "I'm really not qualified to set this to music." And he must have owed this man a favor, because by leaning on him some, he actually created the music to Holy Night. It was performed in that little Catholic church, and within 10 years had swept Spain as the most beloved carol beloved carol in all of France. And then the Catholic Church actually kicked it out of churches because it was too secular. It's hard to think of A Holy Night as being a secular song, but what the church discovered was the man who wrote the music for it was Jewish. And so they actually got rid of it, but the French people did not quit singing it. And it crossed the English Channel, and soon the English were singing it. And it came to America in the 1850s, but not as a Christmas song, but as a song used by the abolitionist movement, because the third verse has in its lyrics, "Chain shall he break, because the slave is our brother. In his name all oppression shall cease." So the abolitionist movement used this song to push for the abolition of slavery. It was only after the Civil War it became a Christmas song in the United States. So that's two stories right there. The third story is, during the Franco-Prussian War, a Frenchman on Christmas Eve jumped out of a foxhole and started singing O Holy Night, and it actually brought peace on earth for 24 hours as the two sides got together and celebrated Christmas together. Now, you also have heard that story in World War One. It also happened in World War One when a Frenchman jumped up and sang that song, and it was answered by a German singing Silent Night. So twice it actually did bring peace on earth on Christmas Eve. The fourth story that's really great is, in 1906, a man named Fessenden did something that everyone thought was impossible. He invented a transmitter that could wirelessly carry the human voice. No one believed this would ever happen. And on Christmas Eve, 1906, this man, sitting in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, starts broadcasting, and people in newsrooms who are used to hearing Morse code come over their sets, or at ships at sea, were hearing this man's voice reading the second chapter of Luke. And then he picked up his violin and played O Holy Night. So O Holy Night was the first song ever played on the radio.
Huh.
So four great stories about one beloved carol. And I think
it is.
All the carols, I think it is my favorite.
You and I nearly share a favorite, because that is either tied or close number two on my list. And before we go to a break, I'll throw one at you. I'm going to guess that it's I actually didn't have the table of contents for either book, the stories behind the best loved songs of Christmas and more stories behind the best loved songs of Christmas from Ace Collins. But mine is O Come Emmanuel.
Oh, yeah. That is, by the way, the oldest carol we sing in its entirety. That actually dates back to the 800 or 900s. And you can imagine, a group of priests in one of these old cathedrals or monasteries singing this song. It's known as the Seven O's because each verse begins with an O. And it really does tell the story of the complete story of the coming of a Savior. And it's a fascinating hymn because other than being translated from Latin into various languages, it has remained intact for 1,200 plus years. And that's hard for us to conceive of because there have been tens of thousands of Christmas carols that have been lost over the years. You know, they were sung for a while, but this song is still sung. It can be sung so easily because the notes only cover a range of seven, so almost anyone could sing it, but it hasn't changed at all. Now, there is a song that's older that we sing part of, and that dates back to at least 130 AD when a church leader said that after reading the second chapter of Luke, all the congregation shall sing Gloria in excelsis Deus. So Gloria that we sing, at least part of it existed in 130, probably the chorus part. And if it existed in 130 and everybody knew it in 130, that meant, because we didn't have radio stations and other things to pass things around, that meant that if everyone knew it, it had been around a long time. So it's not inconceivable to think that someone who might have heard or knew Jesus actually wrote part of that song.
So as we head towards a break, I want to encourage the listener to consider Ace Collins' books, and we're given time, we'll go into more detail in our next segment about all that's available from Ace Collins. But we're focused, of course, today on the stories behind the best loved songs of Christmas, and the stories behind and more stories behind the best loved songs of Christmas. But you know, maybe you know someone, you know, that person who's playing Christmas carols in July. What a great gift to consider as we head towards the Christmas season. As you do your Christmas shopping, you can find Ace Collins' contents, all of it. And so, again, we'll go into more detail about that in our next segment. But wherever you do your shopping for literature. And Ace, as I mentioned, we're up against a break. Can you stay with us?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay. I'd like to come back and we've got, you're just a great storyteller. And we've got more stories to tell more information about some of those products that I mentioned available from Ace Collins. We'll come back with more right after the break on ABQ Connect. We continue our conversation with Ace Collins, author of Stories Behind Best Loved Songs of Christmas. And actually, before we jump into another work that you did, and I'm going to tease it now, the Stories Behind the Best Loved Traditions of Christmas.
The greatest traditions of Christmas.
Ace, there's a story behind this first book with the Best Loved Songs of Christmas getting published that I think is worthy of sharing. And the lesson to be learned is you know, if you have something that is important to you, if it's important enough and you stick with it, the idea will come to fruition.
Yeah, I actually pitched the stories behind the best love songs of Christmas for 10 years and got rejected 27 times by 24 different publishers, which if you do the math, that means that three of the publishers rejected me twice on that same concept. No one believed, one, that the Christmas selling period was long enough to justify a book on stories behind songs. Plus, most people told me that people didn't want to know the stories behind the carols. They just wanted to sing them and hits. And so finally, I had a hit on the stories behind the gospel music's greatest songs, which is called Turn Your Radio On. And that went to so many printings that HarperCollins came back to me. Acquisitions editor said, actually, the exact quote, was there anything else we rejected we should have bought? And I said, yeah, the stories behind the best love songs of Christmas. Of course, that thing raced up to number three on the charts and got me. I mean, we were all over the media with it. And it has become a million seller and has spawned all these other books about Christmas. I think I've written 11 books about Christmas now. And it's turned me into Doc Holliday. And but if I had given up after the first three or four rejections, the book would have never been released. And that would have been a real shame for, one, my career. I mean, you know, I jokingly tell people that when they say, that's a nice house, I said, well, Christmas bought it. You know, I jokingly think that everything in my life, Christmas bought. But the book has been so instrumental, as you look at it all over the world and translated in so many different languages, on bringing the real stories behind these songs and traditions to life. And it has come to mean so much to so many folks. I mean, musicals have been written around it and things like that. And so it's taken on lives that are a multitude of different lives in different directions. And they've had an opportunity to reemphasize stories that had been lost. And when you know the story behind a song or you know the story behind a tradition, it means so much more to you. But the lesson is, don't give up on a good idea.
Yeah, well, and we mentioned stories behind the great traditions of Christmas. And because you're so kind to spend the time, and man, Ace, we could easily do a couple hours on the songs and this and their traditions. But since we have limited time, I'm going to throw it to you for your favorite tradition story.
Oh, gosh. You know, there's so many great traditions, and traditions are like time machines. If I see blue lights on a Christmas tree, I'm reminded of my grandmother's house growing up because she only used blue lights. I think really the story that I find the most interesting of all the Christmas traditions is the story of mistletoe. We think of it as the kissing plant, you know, but if you go back over 1,000 years to Northern Europe, when missionaries were attempting to talk to the Vikings, the Druids, and the Celts about Jesus, they discovered that all three of those groups looked at the mistletoe plant as a magical plant, because it was growing out of a dead piece of wood in the wintertime. And because those people could not read, or couldn't read books and other things, the missionaries would use things like plants to, as tracks, if you will, to exchange, explain who Jesus was, what his life was like, and what his death and resurrection meant. And they used the mistletoe plant. The Vikings believed that trees died in the winter and came back magically to life in the spring, yet this mistletoe plant in that section of the world with its red and white berries, in various sections they have both berries, in some sections they just have red or they have white, in this section they had both, they explained that the mistletoe plant growing out of the dead piece of wood represented Christ being nailed to a dead piece of wood. The green in that plant represented the fact that his life was everlasting. In other words, even in the darkest days of winter, it remained green. The white represented the berries represented his purity. The red represented the blood shed on the cross for these people. The fact that it never died in the various times represented the everlasting life they would receive when they accepted Christ as their Savior. Well, the Vikings, Druids, and Celts, as they became Christians, would nail mistletoe plants over their doors. By the way, the mistletoe plant also had such mystical powers that Vikings and Druids and Celts, if they met in the forest to fight, to have war, if there was a mistletoe plant there, they had to find a way to seek peace. So the elderly missionaries also pointed out that this plant that was their peace plant stood for the Prince of Peace, Jesus himself. Eventually, these people would hang the sprigs over their babies' beds and other things to as an act of saying God is looking out for you. And then to remind their young married people that if they kept faith in their lives, they could survive even the most challenging of times, they had the bride and groom marry underneath the mistletoe plant. Well, what do you do at the end of a marriage ceremony even 1,000 years ago? You kiss. We have forgotten all about all the things that turned the mistletoe into a tract that explained about faith, life, and what Jesus's death and resurrection meant. And now just think of it as the kissing plant. But it was one of the great tools of the early missionary to lead people to the Lord.
Well, there's so many stories that we could go through. And again, if we had the time, I would love it. I do have a question. One of the rules of interviewing is you should know the answer to the question before you ask it. But I'm going to ask, because as I hear you tell the stories, Ace, and there's so many different there's so much different content available through the works that you've done over the years. Audiobooks are a big thing. Have you personally narrated any of the books that are available?
Actually, I've only narrated one, and that was a recent novel I had.
Okay.
They never asked me. I do all this voiceover work and everything else, and publishers have never asked me to actually do the audiobooks. And it's
well, you
so
can
I don't
hear
know,
the,
I don't know who do my who does my audiobooks.
You can hear your passion in the telling, and just like they missed early publication of the stories behind the Christmas songs, best loved Christmas songs. I think they kind of maybe missed the mark a little bit there. But one of the things I did want to bring up too is, in addition to the variety of content, including novels that you mentioned, much of the work that you've done is available in different languages. And it made me think of missionaries that many of us may know out there now serving in places with languages that maybe some of the works that we've mentioned already are available in some of those languages. And for other reasons that may appeal to them. How many languages are some of these works available in?
Oh gosh, Chinese, Taiwan, Taiwanese, Thai. You go on. German, Spanish, obviously. Unless the publisher tells me, I don't know. Actually do have a few of the Chinese books that I find fascinating because they open back to front and others, and that they're kind of fun for me to look at. The written word translated into all these different languages amazes you. And because of the immediacy of being contacted, I get emails from all over the world too that are circulated to me through my website. And it's amazing to visit with folks. I'll be visiting tomorrow with some people with a large Spanish-speaking audience. And, of course, the books are in Spanish, so they have read them that way. And I have enough problems writing in English. I can't imagine my words being in all these different languages. It's absolutely mind-blowing in so many different ways. By the way, the first light on the Christmas tree, Martin Luther tied a candle onto a tree and told his children, this represents the light that came into a dark world at when Jesus was born. He was using it as a great, instrument of teaching. I don't know that he understood he was also creating the first Christmas fire hazard, when he did that. Also, Christmas trees go back to the 1500s in Lithuania, and for the first 50 years, they were hung upside down from the ceiling.
Yeah, it's incredible the history that can be learned by going through some of these. And as we put a bow on our conversation, Ace, I did want to, you mentioned the novels. For those not familiar, if you could let them know, and there's a there's a hefty amount to go through. So once you, sure. you buzz through the first one and you think, oh, I wish there's plenty more to go through.
I actually am just finishing up going through the edits on the 22nd in a series of World War II adventure novels that are actually being turned into radio dramas, too, now.
And, oh, very
and
good.
So the series is called In the President's Service series, and it begins at the beginning of World War II and takes you through World War II. We're up to 1944 now. I love writing those because who gets to write 2.5 million words about one character? I mean, that is so much fun. Probably the most awarded novel I have is The Color of Justice, which was Suspense Novel of the Year, I think, in 2015 or 16. Novels give me an opportunity to tell stories that I'm passionate about. But in all of my novels, be they historic or science fiction or anything else, I'm examining topics from today. They can be prejudice, they can be other things, and in the parameter of the time. And
yeah.
It gives me an opportunity to subtly teach lessons. The other thing about my novels is there's no profanity. There's no sexual scenes or anything else. We talk about some gritty stuff, but just like the movies from the 1930s and 40s, you can talk about gritty stuff without having language in it. I mean, Clive Cussler proves that with all the novels that he has sold today. So my novels are therefore safe for teenagers and others to read. And I just don't see the reason you have to have the profanity to make the point. You know, so that's my novels are novels that I guess are family friendly, even though they do hit some pretty deep and some pretty gritty morals involved.
So does the Bible.
Supposed to make people think. Literature is supposed to make people think. So we do that.
Hey, I want to direct people. Obviously, I've mentioned you can shop wherever you get your favorite literature. AceCollins.com, though, is a website you can go to and find out more about what Ace is up to. Ace, as always, it is a joy, and it's never enough time because you are a great storyteller, and we appreciate the time you've taken as we head into the holiday season to consider some of those best loved songs and carols and traditions.
Let me leave you with this. The story I wanted to know the most about was the story behind God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, because as a child I couldn't figure out why God would want happy people to sleep. I discovered in writing the story, it's a song that dates back 500-600 years, that the word rest in Old England at that time meant make or keep. So we should be singing it, God make you merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. And then I discovered the word merry, which was merry Old England, Robin Hood and his merry men, at that time meant mighty or great, which is the reason the English speaking people in Great Britain say happy Christmas rather than merry Christmas. It's always meant happy in the United States. But we should be singing God rest you merry gentlemen this way. God make you mighty gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ your Savior was born on Christmas Day. So for all you listeners, have a mighty Christmas.
Oh, I love it. Ace, thanks again for your time, and look forward to having you back on as soon as we can.
You bet.
All right. And thank you for listening to ABQ Connect.